Richard Estep will be my guest for the remainder of the show as we talk about true-life paranormal encounters in asylums, hospitals, and institutions. His book, The World's Most Haunted Hospitals, out and available. You can find information at the Coast to Coast AM website by clicking on the link right there. I get a chance to travel all over the world, and last year I was in Australia, where I had a chance to talk and record this gentleman's story. He was very kind, willing to let me share this, and he is a paramedic in Australia. He had a unique encounter, something a little different than we'd heard before, and I'd like to share that with the audience, and then we'll come back and talk more with our guest. I think we've got that queued up and ready to go, so let's go. This is a paramedic's true paranormal encounter.
That's why I was trained to be a paramedic.
Okay.
I was an EMT at the time. And we were at a cardiac arrest call in a nursing home, and the gentleman in question had collapsed in the restroom. And being the technician, I was in charge of doing the chest compressions and what we call bagging, or using a bag of mask to breathe the patient as the paramedic set up drugs and so on. And as I'm working away doing chest compressions, bagging the patient, chest compressions and so on, I happened to look up just to the left of the patient. And the patient I was working on was sitting in the chair watching me, completely solid.
Wow.
To the point where I let a bit of a four-letter word out of me. And my colleague says, "You look like you've seen a ghost, you are right." And I said, "I don't know what the hell I've just seen." And at that point, it disappeared. I says, "I don't know what I've just seen, but it's freaked me a wee bit." And within 5 minutes, I had a call death.
So you did have to call him dead?
Yes.
Wow, but did he seem to be watching you, or was he just
kind of sitting back, the way he was trying to sit back with the arm folded like that, just watching.
Wow.
As if he was watching TV.
That's pretty cool, because we hear so many of these stories where the patient is out of body watching the paramedic work on them, and then when they come back to the body, they remember all about the paramedic, but this is the other side of the story. You saw the physical form there. Yes. How did that impact you?
It scared the hell out of me. I didn't know what it was. To me, I rationalized it as it was an after image, because I'm looking down at the patient, and I look up. Now, rationally speaking, then he should have been upside down, because I'm kneeling on the ground with the patient's head between my legs, so I'm looking at him upside down. But when I looked up, he was sitting the right way up with the arms folded up and watching me.
Yeah, totally different pose.
Literally seconds, and he was gone.
Wow. Very cool. That's it. And I apologize. That was not my Australia trip. That was in Ireland when we were at the All Ireland Paracon, as you can tell by the very thick accent. We're working on trying to get that video up on the Coast to Coast AM website so you can watch it again. And I know his accent's sometimes a little hard to pick up over the audio, but we'll try to get that up on the website so you can listen to it. But a great little story. Usually, again, you'll hear people that have had these near-death experiences where they're out hovering above watching the paramedics work on their body, and then when they re-enter, they'll share that story. In this case, he watched as he was working on this person, as the spirit of the person sat there watching him, knowing that he was not going to be revived. Very strange story. We've got more stories like that. We're going to talk about some of the creepier and strange encounters covered in the book, The World's Most Haunted Hospitals. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. We will open up phone lines at the bottom of the hour. If you've had encounters at hospitals with the paranormal, we'd love to hear your stories as well. One of our listeners, KB, writes in and wants to know, Richard, why is it usually old hospitals are haunted and not new ones? Is it because it takes a large amount of deaths over time for a place to be considered haunted? Or are there new hospitals that also have these claims? I just never hear about them.
That is a great question, Dave. And KB, I think that it takes time for those layers of emotion to build up. I think they build up kind of like sediment does, you know, if you look at the ground, if you look at soil. So I think that with every year, let's say, just to pick an arbitrary time frame, every year you have so many births, so many deaths, so much happiness, so much joy, so much sadness, so much tragedy. And I think it all compounds until finally you reach a kind of critical mass, and then you see this kind of activity starting to happen.
Well, I know that there are cases, like when you look at Waverly Hills Sanitarium in Louisville, Kentucky, probably one of the most haunted hospitals out there. There were stories very early on in its career of ghosts being seen, strange interactions with spirits, and that was before the massive amounts of death that went through there. And again, that touches on the who's haunting who. You know, when we're in there investigating and we've seen spirits of nurses see us and react by running, were we haunting them back when the hospital opened? Was the experiences they saw us there experiencing them? Just a strange time loop when you start to consider all these cases. But let's talk about some of the stories and firsthand accounts that you cover in the book, and give me a couple of your favorite spooky stories.
A couple of my favorite spooky stories. Well, one of my favorite ones comes from London, from University College Hospital. And it's a story in which one of the nurses back there in the 19th century found herself in a position that no medical provider should be allowed to be in. She found herself caring for her own fiancé. And you can kind of see this tragedy coming a mile away, but she ended up accidentally overdosing him on morphine. And of course, give too much morphine, it not only drops the patient's blood pressure, but it slows down their respiratory drive and can make them quit breathing, which is what happened in this case. And so nurses there tell the story that when narcotics like morphine are about to be given, this nurse, whose name was Lizzie Church, her ghost has been reported just kind of lurking around on the ward. And it's seen as very much a cautionary tale. It's believed that she's saying, make sure that you check your dosing carefully, because once you've given a drug, you can't take it back. You can always give a little bit more. It's like the old carpentry saying, you know, measure twice, cut once. You can't take it back, so be very, very careful. Don't find yourself in the situation I was in. And I kind of like that. It's sad. There's a bit of, there's an element of tragedy to it, but
right.
It's also very helpful and serves as a wonderful reminder.
It's an amazing story when you think about it, that there's that kind of impact and effect that even in death, some of these caretakers still hang about to help, you know, help each other out.
It's absolutely true. And that hospital's, it's a fascinating location. It actually has a painting that used to hang in the in one of the lobbies for the longest time. It was the painting of one of the surgeons there. And it hung there for 150 years. But there was a story that there was a curse attached to this particular painting. And they actually used to cover it up. In fact, it used to be part of the duties of the night nursing staff that someone would be delegated to cover the painting up. And then the oncoming day staff would uncover it. And that went great until somebody actually stole the painting. And the curse said that if anybody fell asleep under the painting, they would either become seriously ill in the very near future, or they would die in their sleep and would never wake up again. And I always wanted to know what happened to that painting, you know, and was somebody foolish enough to hang it over their bed?
Right, yeah. If they knew that this curse is going on, first of all, what led them to believe that there was a curse surrounding this picture?
That's a great question. It's one that I wasn't able to find an answer to. But like so much in most traditional cultural institutions and the nursing profession, I say this with the greatest respect, and I'm sure your mom would agree, Dave, is a very, it passes on its traditions from one generation to the next, you know, and it's a very proud tradition, and rightfully so. So there is a big element of that being intergenerational storytelling. You know, sometimes it's as simple as tricks of the trade, you know, but also these kind of stories do tend to crop up. And that kind of takes us to another London hospital, one in which a friend of mine works. She's a physician at St. Thomas's, which is facing the Houses of Parliament and directly facing the London Eye on the Thames. And this is a very nurse-related story because the hospital has a lady in grey, or the grey lady, as she's called. And what's fascinating about this case, Dave, is that twofold, really. She's kind of a celebrity ghost. She's believed by some to be the spirit of Florence Nightingale, who actually operated out of St. Thomas's and set up her nursing institution for the training of nurses out of there. And she's been seen going back year after year after year after year after year. Second World War, First World War. In fact, in the Second World War, St. Thomas's was damaged by a German bomb, and she was seen that night too. And my friend actually encountered her on a late night shift. What's fascinating about this particular ghost is that she's also, when nurses and when people that work in the hospital see her, the stories talk about the air going suddenly very cold. They talk about her looking very severe, you know, very prim and proper, as we would think of those Victorian era nurses, the images that would come to mind. But when she encounters patients, she's been seen doing things like bringing them cups of tea, which is just incredible. So you see her actually rendering care or ministering to the sick. And I think, again, that's a very kind of hopeful as well as fascinating story.
I know we talked to a gentleman a few months back. I can't remember if I talked to him on Darkness Radio or on Coast to Coast AM, but he was talking about being on site after 9/11. And they would be doing the recovery, and there was this nurse that was seen helping people and delivering food and drinks and things. And when they got down to trying to figure out who she was, nobody knew, and she would be there 1 minute and gone the next. And she would be seen moving about where the bodies were located after the death. The remains were being held, and she would be there and then gone, and then appear again to bring aid or help someone else out or help out some of the paramedics or workers. And, you know, it's amazing that even in death, they would remain vigilant to their cause. One of the hospitals my mom worked at, and she'll never be forthcoming with which one, as I think it's probably some kind of feature they just don't necessarily want the hospital to talk about. But there was a little girl that had passed away, and she used to I think 4 or 5 years old, and she would sit there and hit the little buzzer to call the nurses all the time and bring the light. And her death was sudden and, you know, unexplained at the time, and she was gone. But within days, the room was empty. They would be out there talking, and all of a sudden the light would start dinging for them to go in, and they'd go in and check and thought, well, maybe the button had fallen or something had happened, and it'd be right there in the middle of the bed, nothing touching it, nothing going off, but it would be going off. And they'd go in and they'd, you know, reset the light, and they'd come back out and talk for a little bit, and all of a sudden that light would start ringing again. And they'd go back in, reset the light, and then it would start ringing again. And it wasn't until my mom finally went in and in front of the other nurses addressed this little girl and said, honey, we really have a lot of work to do. And, you know, it's okay if you want to stay here with us and be around, but we can't keep being bothered by the light. And the light stopped and never went back on again. So, you know, it's those kind of stories that fascinate me about the idea of hospitals. How many actual medical professionals shared their experiences with you for this book?
Well, it was amazing how many wouldn't go on the record. Actually, I shouldn't say that was amazing. I absolutely understand the position hospital administrators take, because
right.
It's the 21st century, and if you look at most modern hospitals, they are glass, they are steel, they look very futuristic, they're very 21st century, you know, in appearance, they're high-tech, and it seems kind of anachronistic when we talk about these kind of ghost stories. And administrators, the hospital managers take the line that it's bad PR if you have ghost stories. So they like to keep a lid on it. And again, understandably so, because it's probably not the most conducive thing to rest and recovery, you know, if you're halfway scared out of your mind that the ward is haunted. But when you get docs talking, when you get nurses talking behind closed doors, if you will, off the record, so many of them have stories. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. So many of them have stories, and they make excellent witnesses, because these are people that are scientifically trained. You know, they have an excellent understanding of biology, of chemistry, of the natural sciences, and they're able to think critically and clinically. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do their jobs. So these are not people that are given to flights of fancy most of the time. And that, to me, makes their testimony all the more impressive.
Are there any haunted hospitals that you visited that didn't end up making it into this book?
The only one that didn't make it into this book was Waverly Hills. And I agree with you entirely that it's a very haunted location, although the night that my team spent there was extremely quiet. We had very minimal experiences, just one that was kind of interesting. But they actually did not want to appear in the book.
So they really?
They chose not to be a part of it. I believe that they're working on their own book.
Wow, that's amazing to me. Charlie and Tina Mattingly, the owners, love the media. They seem to love to have their stories shared and experiences. And, you know, I'll share one with you briefly. again, one of the very first locations I did a large event at, I brought in some of the celebrities from the different paranormal shows, was Waverly Hills. And we did it with about 150 of our listeners came in, and they were broken up into smaller groups and had a chance to investigate with the celebrities throughout the building. And I'd set everybody off to investigate. And Tina, the owner, and I were walking down this long, dark corridor to head back to the kind of home base. And she goes, "Turn off your flashlight, Schrader. We're going to see some shadow people." And I'm very skeptical. I know how the eyes work in low light settings, and there's floaters in your eyes, and your eyes are constantly adjusting to try to make sense of the darkness and the light around you. So what I thought was funny was, as we're walking, we weren't more than 5 or 10 steps down, and she goes, "Stop, look." And she's much shorter than I am. So I kind of ducked my head to her level to see what she was seeing. And sure enough, there appeared to be this like head and shoulders shadow moving by a door frame. And it seemed to be bobbing in and out like it was looking at us and then bob back. And then the skeptical aspect of me kicked in. That was before they put in all the new windows and did all that, so that side was exposed. And you could hear the wind, the whoo. And we knew there was a full moon that night because everybody was excited about investigating. And I know that that side had a bunch of trees. And I thought, you know what I'm looking at? I'm watching a tree branch bobbing in the wind. And it's got that exact same sway and look. And it's almost rhythmic with the wind. That's all it is. So I didn't want to be rude to my host. I was like, "Oh, yeah, Tina, that's interesting." And as I turned and started to walk down the hall, right in front of me, walking towards me, was a full three-dimensional black figure, a shadow figure. Its shoulder passed through my left shoulder. And I turned around and pivoted and looked at this, and I yelled, "What the hell is that?" And you could see it walking down the hall, and then suddenly the end of the hall was completely blacked out. You could not see the end of the hall. And then, boom, you could see it again. And she said, "Well, that's our resident ghost known as Big Black. Sometimes he'll fill up an entire hallway with darkness." And it was chilling, exhilarating, exciting all at the same time, and one of the most profound experiences I've ever had. We were also doing an EVP session with Mark and Debbie Constantino, who we spoke about in the first segment of this evening's show. And I caught a very interesting EVP. We went into the morgue area. They turned on their recorder, and before we even began to speak, we were all getting adjusted, and it was a smaller group of us, and then they began to do their EVP session. When we played it back, as soon as you hear the recorder go on, you hear these two voices, and one goes, "Shh, they're going to try to record us," and the other one said, "Okay." And it was just so strange. It was as if they were aware we were there and what we were there to do. And it was right at the beginning, before they even engaged trying to communicate. And you know what? We got nothing in that entire segment. It was right at the beginning of the recording. So Waverly Hills is one of the most crazy active locations I've ever personally been to. I've heard footsteps following me up the death tunnel. We've seen shadow figures. People have had full-on encounters of being touched, hearing things, seeing things move up in front of their face. It is a really creepy location if you get a chance to investigate it.
And, you know, it was we spent one night there, which isn't nearly enough in my book. I think you need a month, and you still couldn't cover Waverly. And we had some experiences. Footsteps followed my wife up one of the staircases. And perhaps the most interesting experience, you bring up the death tunnel. Two of the investigators heard me talking down in the death tunnel, and they recognized my voice. They recognized that I have a different accent to the rest of the team. Only catch is that I was up on the roof at the opposite end of the building. And as you'll know, there's no way my voice could have carried that far down into the death tunnel, which is underground. So that was kind of fascinating too. But the atmosphere the night I went there was so calm, it was so peaceful and so tranquil, you know? And I felt enormously privileged to be there. It was kind of hushed, as if you were in a church, you know, that kind of don't want to raise my voice too much. It would seem disrespectful.
Right.
And yet my friends that had gone in the past, a couple of years before, had very much as you had, they'd seen shadow figures in the hallways. They talked about it as being the most paranormally active place ever. And I was wondering, you know, did we just go on the wrong night? Did my team not bring the right energies, the right mix of personnel? Is it because we were all tired from the flight? You know, has it just been mined out? I don't know. I couldn't say. But I would go back again in a heartbeat.
We will continue with our guest, and we'll start taking your phone calls. If you've had experiences, haunting experiences at a hospital or at a clinic, anything like that, we'd love to hear your encounter. So give us a call as we continue to talk about the world's most haunted hospitals here on Coast to Coast AM. How would you like to read all of these encounters, all of these great stories, and know that your money is going to a good cause? Well, our guest is here to tell you a little bit about that. Richard, what happens with the purchase of each one of the books of the world's most haunted hospitals?
Well, Dave, I'm giving 10% of my royalties from this book to the St. Baldrick's Foundation, which is a charity which not only funds children's cancer research and helps find the cure for that horrendous disease, but also helps to support the children and families that are coping with it.
So again, if you purchase the book, 10% of all the royalties go to this very worthwhile charity to help children and families dealing with cancer. So make sure that you make that change. Go pick up a copy of the book for yourself and share that story. This makes a great gift as well. So as long as you know you're buying a book that's going to go to help a charity, take advantage of that while you can. We're going to take another quick break. We'll begin back with your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. It's going by much too quickly. Our guest, Richard Estep, and the world's most haunted hospitals. I'd like to hear a couple quick more stories from your book, and then we'll open up the phone lines here and start taking the calls that are lining up. Give me two more of your favorite stories from the book.
Well, another one of my favorite stories, Dave, comes from my friend Noel Boyd in Singapore. I wanted to cast a pretty wide net with this book. You know, it's got the word world in it. So I wanted to get out of the U.S. and Europe a little bit, too. And in Singapore, the old Changi Hospital was once a Royal Air Force British military base. But during the Second World War, when Singapore was invaded, the Japanese secret police used it as their headquarters. And they used it as their primary location for extracting information, which was not done nicely. So a great deal of torture in that location. A great deal of pain, a great deal of misery, and the place is just haunted as all get out. And when I talked to Noel, he spent a night in there with his crew. As he'd been asking around, talking to the locals, one instance involved a guy that went in there for basically a lark, as we say in the UK, you know, just for fun. It was the kind of dare of local teenagers to break into the old hospital and see if they could run through the grounds. And whatever happened to him in there was so severe that they had to take him immediately out of there to a nearby temple because they insisted that he was possessed by some kind of demonic entity.
What was he doing? What kind of reactions was he having?
So when I talked to Noel, the guy was speaking in a language that wasn't his own, was kind of frothing at the mouth and was behaving violently. In fact, they considered taking him to the police first till somebody said, hey, these are the evil spirits that still haunt the old hospital. Take him to the temple, get him a local holy man. So violent behavior. And other visitors to that hospital report about bringing something back with them. And so you've got numerous accounts of people that would, again, try this dare. They would go into the hospital. Maybe nothing would happen to them in there, although a lot reported hearing footsteps, reported hearing the squeaking of old wheelchairs. When they would get home, they would have a disturbed night's sleep, and then they would actually start to experience signs and symptoms of medical conditions, feeling as though they couldn't breathe, feeling as though their air supply was cut off, open their eyes, and they would see what appeared to be the ghosts of former patients of the hospital standing in the room with them.
Wow, very interesting. And give me one more quick story, and then I know we've got a lot of calls lining up. I want to make sure we give them a chance.
One more quick story. I think probably my next favorite one would involve the Clark Air Base Hospital. It's a U.S. military hospital in the Philippines, no longer operational. It's defunct after a volcano covered it all in ash, would you believe? But back in the 60s and 70s, Clark Air Base was the first stop bringing wounded American servicemen back from Vietnam. So you had a great deal of physical and emotional trauma coming back on those flights, and they would get medical care there at the base hospital, then return to the U.S., return stateside, this constant parade of wounded soldiers. And I think the most fascinating story there involves a night security guard who was making his rounds one night and encountered the what had to be the apparition of a U.S. serviceman, except for the fact that this man had no face. He had just a black mass where his face should have been. Everything else was correct, including his uniform, but no face. The guard happened to be smoking, and the serviceman held out a hand and mimed for him, hey, give me a cigarette, give me a cigarette. According to the guard, he passed the cigarette over and lit it for the apparition, who then disappeared, taking the cigarette with him.
Oh, no, 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 no. Something with no face appears in front of me beckoning for a smoke or a sip of my cola. I'm not handing it over. I'm out the door, Richard.
I'm right there with you, Dave. In fact, I hope I can outrun you.
If not, you can always trip me. Let's go east of the Rockies. We've got Tumbleweed Ted joining us on Coast to Coast from South Carolina. Hey, Ted, what's your story for us this evening?
This happened back in 2000. I had a retinal detachment, and I had to get an operation. I went up to St. Francis Hospital in Greenville, South Carolina. And the operation went okay, and I had to spend the night in the hospital. And the next morning, I'm lying on my stomach, and a nun came in the room and said, do you mind if I say a prayer for you? And I said, well, no, I could use all the help I can get right now. And so she said the most wonderful prayer, and as she said it, this warm feeling started at my feet and just went all up my body. It was the most amazing feeling I've ever felt. It actually brought a tear to my eye. And I thanked her, and the reason I knew it was a nun because I kind of lifted my head up and looked back, and I could see it was a nun in a full habit. Anyway, fast forward a couple of hours, I was getting released, and the nurse came in and was prepping me on what to do, and I said, by the way, when you see that nun that said that prayer for me, be sure to thank her again. That was the most beautiful prayer. And she said, there was no nun. There's no nun up here on this floor. There has not been one. So, this is a story of a benevolent ghost, I guess you could say, Richard.
Absolutely, and it sounds as though she brought you a great deal of comfort.
She really did, and the eye healed back perfectly, and, I have not perfect vision out of the eye now because I went blind in my left eye from this retinal detachment, but they had to go in and, I don't know what they did, but they fixed it.
That's great, and that you had that kind of immediate comfort and sensation that happened. Very cool. Thanks a lot for listening and giving us a call, Ted. We've got west of the Rockies, Michael, who's out trucking through Oregon. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I've had similar experience. I've got a similar background, EMT, and worked in a bunch of hospitals. But there's one that I could never explain. I was working in an ICU, and a lady came in with terminal cancer, and we put her in room one. And she was a really sweet lady. I went in and talked to her a couple of times. One of those people that, you just feel that they're nice people. And a day later or so, I was working, and she was going downhill rapidly. And I saw a big flash out of the corner of my eye, and that happened to be coming from room one where she was located. And we had just put new monitors and telemetry units in, and all of them went down, flashed. And then all the even ones came up, but the odd ones stayed down. And so I went through my whole system, and I had helped set it up. The odd thing is 1 through 5 was set up on one server, and 6 through 10 were set up on the other, and they weren't interconnected at all. So it was really strange, and we had difficulties with that room for months afterwards, so bad that they brought in a priest to do a blessing on it. And over a time, it came back to normal, but it was really strange.
Very cool, Michael. Thank you for calling in and sharing your story with us. I have to apologize. I have an email that was sent in to us from Robert. It's an extremely long email I won't be able to read, but the essence of the story is he is a paramedic, ambulance driver. He had a very interesting experience as they had gone to the site of a crash. Had two passengers in the ambulance, and as they were racing towards the hospital, as he's approaching an intersection and the lights are turning green for him to get through, he's got the foot down on the gas, but the car, the ambulance itself, continues to slow itself down coming through the intersection. And he can't figure it out. He's lifting his foot off the gas and pounding on the gas, trying to get it through. But the ambulance just keeps slowing, gets right to the intersection and stops. Even though he's got his foot fully to the ground, as he does that, a car comes ripping through the intersection. And as soon as that car buzzed through the intersection, the ambulance regained control and he was able to get to the hospital. But he firmly believes that there was some kind of intervention there watching out for their safety. He thinks if they would have been going at their normal pace, this car would have careened right into them and caused a horrific accident and made things even worse for the passengers already on board. We've got first-time caller, and if you want to email me stories, if you've got your experiences, can't get through on the lines, you can shoot them over to me at dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. First-time caller, we've got Frank in Asheville, North Carolina. Frank, thank you for joining us. What's your story?
Well, I worked EMS in St. Louis, and I won't name the nursing home or the long-term facility that it was at, but I was sitting and talking to the nurses at the nurses' station, and they had a light go on, one of the call lights. And the nurses, I was wounded in Iraq in 2004, so I'm familiar with legitimate fear. And they wouldn't go in there. They said that they'd had an individual had died in there. He was an exceptionally tall man, so he had a special bed that was made. And the bed was still in there, and the room that he had died in had become a storage room. And while I'm sitting there, the call light comes on, and I'm laughing at them, and they're like, go down there and feel. You'll feel how cold it is. And I went into that room, and it was discernibly, I mean, it was considerably lower temperature, 15, 20 degrees. And I had been in a ghost hunting group and stuff with a big fan of you guys from New Haven, Missouri. He's written a couple books. But I'm a huge skeptic, and definitely a noticeable change in temperature. It was unusual, but those girls were afraid.
Well, understandably. Strange situation. Have you had experiences throughout your life dealing with the different aspects of the paranormal, or are you always trying to, as a skeptic, debunk them before you allow your brain to accept them as something outside the normal?
See, that's what I was always told. I'm not sure if you've heard of Stephen LaChance. We went on a couple of sites with him in Missouri. He's an author out there on a lot of paranormal stuff. And
right.
Dan Terry was my captain on the police department that I was training with. And he's written a couple now in Franklin County, Missouri, and things like that on different hauntings. And we explored a lot of sites. And, I mean, there are some things that I couldn't explain. Like, I wasn't sure if I heard whispering. Sometimes my hairs would stand up on end. And this was post-Iraq, post-getting wounded, post, you know, operations in Fallujah in 2004, so I thought that I was pretty much impervious to any kind of primordial fear. You know, I thought I'd conquered all of the, you know, whatever archaic memory, you know, our brain holds.
Right.
But there's some strange stuff, you know, but nothing that I could ever confirm or tell somebody, you know, this is what I saw and I'm not able to prove it. I mean, things that I couldn't, that weren't tangible, that I couldn't measure or capture on film, definitely, but nothing that's made me a believer yet, except that room, the call light did come on, and I saw both of those nurses sitting there. The door, the room was locked. They had to unlock it, and it was considerably colder in there, and it was a noticeable change in temperature. I'm a big guy. I like air-conditioned rooms, and this one was air-conditioned, and the hallway was not. And there
Very
was no
cool.
reason to, you know, to keep that room cool when there was nobody in there.
Right. Thank you, Frank. We appreciate the call in. You know, something kind of fun that happened, Richard, with our first guest this evening, Chris Fleming. We had been out investigating, and I believe it was at, I want to say it was Alcatraz.
Hey, you believe
it? Yeah, I believe it was Alcatraz. Gosh, we've been to so many locations, but one of the things that he's had really great response with is using the digital thermometers. And he had two side by side, and they were both showing, you know, 86 degrees. And he asked the spirits, he goes, could you please manipulate this, you know, drop it down to 75 degrees. And as he's talking, and he says, can you influence the other thermometer to go in the opposite direction? So as we're talking, and he's kind of trying to negotiate with the spirits to affect these digital thermometers, the really weird thing is, as it's ticking down and doing this, and we were in the infirmary ward, the one reaches 75 degrees, the other one reaches 57. So it was 75, 57, and it stayed that way. And he goes, you're doing a great job. Thank you very much. You can let him go now. And as soon as he said that, they both stopped, and they both started climbing back up until they got to the temperature of the room. I've never seen anything like that in my life. And these aren't remote control. They're the regular handheld thermometers. And there were two people holding those thermometers and pointing them at the exact same spot. And they were getting completely strange responses on that. Let's go wild card line one, Jack in Canada. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I'm really enjoying the show.
Thank you.
I have a long story, but I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to have to really condense it for you. I spent 35-plus years working in a psychiatric hospital, and we had one woman there who we believed was actually possessed. And the doctors, the nursing staff, all the way up and down the line was believed that. Well, occasionally she would flip out, as it were, and have to be put into a seclusion room. And on this one occasion, I was working straight midnight to 7 a.m. And it was my turn at 2 o'clock or 2:30 in the morning to go and do a round to make sure that all of the patients were sleeping. Well, of course, I went by the seclusion room and moved back the curtain, and she was not asleep. She was standing sideways on the wall. And I put the curtain back down and turned around and walked back to the office, and the nurse in charge said, "So, is it quiet?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, it's fine, yeah." And, since I told that story, and I didn't tell anybody for years, but since I told that story, I found out a buddy of mine had actually had an experience with her when, not to the same extreme, but he looked in the room on another occasion during the daytime to look at her, and he thought that she was standing a couple inches off the floor, but he dismissed it, thinking it was just, you know, maybe I'm tired or whatever. But it was pretty unsettling, to say the least. So
yeah, just a little bit. Wow, that is chilling. Thank you for calling in. Are you looking for more stories like this, Richard, to add and put out another book?
Absolutely. In fact, I think the more that I hear, I think that another book is a pretty good idea. Whether you call it more of the world's haunted hospitals, I don't know. But, yeah, I want to keep digging into this stuff.
Yeah, I can't imagine not wanting to. Real quickly, west of the Rockies, Betsy, we've only got a minute and a half left together. Did you have a quick story for us?
Yes, I do. My stepson was dying of a brain tumor, and he was in the pediatric ward of the UC Davis Med Center in Sacramento. And he saw a nurse with, I think it was a green dress or something. But the nurses told us the children that die always see that nurse. And
really? So she makes herself known prior to their passing.
Yeah. And there was a couple other weird things, not specifically about the hospital, but I really think that before people die, when they're halfway in between this world and the next, they sometimes know things that they wouldn't otherwise know. And he kept saying, "Somebody's pregnant, somebody's pregnant." And we were like, "We don't know what you're talking about. You know, nobody's pregnant." It turned out to be me, but I didn't know it at the time.
Oh, really? And he picked up on that?
Yeah. Unfortunately, wow. I miscarried after he died, but the fact that it was bugging him. "Somebody's
sure.
pregnant." It just was bugging him to high heaven. So anyway, but apparently they're at UC Davis. They see this nurse before they die.
Thank you for sharing your personal story with us, Betsy. I want to thank everybody that was involved in the show, all the great callers sharing in with us this evening, Nathan and Gina back at the home base, my engineer and music spinner this evening, Tim Dennis here in Minnesota, Chris Boros, Lisa Lyon, George Norrie, of course, and my guests, Chris Fleming and Richard Estep. I'll be back with you later on in the month, I believe the 23rd of April, and we'll be talking about the Dracula Secrets, Jack the Ripper, and the Darkest Sources of Bram Stoker with Neil Story, an amazing historian. You'll want to be here with me on that. Remember to check out my website, darknessradio.com, and become part of the Army of Darkness. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and being a part of the world with us this evening. Be safe, love one another, and I'll talk to you again real soon.